Today's deep dive is powered by insights from Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about M&A insights in CW23-24. Frenis is a B2B market research company working with enterprises to optimize their campaigns with account and executive insights far beyond AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. So today we're really plunging into the latest M&A trends, the stuff that's been really buzzing on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Our goal is pretty straightforward. Give you a quick, insightful shortcut, you know, help you understand what's truly shaping the mergers and acquisitions landscape right now.
Exactly. It's like a concentrated dose of the key M&A chatter.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really striking, I think, from Thomas Allgaier's summary of all these recent LinkedIn insights is this fundamental shift happening.
Okay.
We seem to be moving from that kind of cautious optimism phase more towards demanding really precise execution.
More rigor.
Yeah, much more. So boards, for example, they're not just relying on, you know, the usual tough valuation tools. They're pairing those much more often now with AI-powered diligence. And crucially, they're really elevating people integration and leadership continuity. Those seem to be the main levers now for protecting value. It's a subtle shift, but really important.
That definitely sounds critical.
Okay.
Let's maybe unpack that a bit. Our first theme we've pulled out is strategy and rationale. It's really all about how companies are adapting their M&A game plan in the current market.
Yeah. And a key insight here is how these sophisticated merger models are guiding things. It's not just about the numbers anymore. They're really looking at the actual strategic fit and running different scenario evaluations. Scott Powell, for instance, he really emphasizes that these models aren't just like technical exercises for analysts. They are absolutely core to how strategic deals get evaluated. Doesn't matter if it's investment banking, corp dev, or PE.
Right.
And Tomas Baglietto builds on that. He highlights this critical need to sort of rethink M&A strategy for the challenges we face today, focusing much more sharply on, you know, execution, integration, agility.
Less opportunistic, more deliberate.
Exactly. Less opportunistic, much more strategic foresight involved.
And we're definitely seeing this translate into activity, right?
Yeah.
Christopher Coomer noted a real uptick. What was it? 815 announced deals recently worth USD $88.8
billion. Wow, that's significant.
Yeah. And some big names, too, like Toyota's massive $33 billion take private. There was a really bold strategic realignment, clearly aimed at their electrification goals.
Right.
Or Sanofi doing that $9.5 billion Blueprint Medicines bolt-on specifically to speed up their rare disease pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't just one-offs either. Andy Hayes pointed out that this shows the benefits of what he calls programmatic M&A.
The repeatable approach.
Exactly. That consistent strategic way of doing acquisitions for steady value creation over time.
It's fascinating how proactive buyers are getting, too. Tulihan Ordemi stressed that the serious buyers, they're focusing on really clear acquisition criteria now.
Okay.
And even getting partnerships pre-aligned to speed up inorganic growth. And Herwig Springer made a really sharp point. The best deals, he says, are often won way before due diligence even starts.
Really? How so?
In those early conversations, building trust, really probing the target's resilience, their team dynamics. You know, the softer stuff that tells you a lot.
That's insightful.
And Johannes Redl took that idea and applied it to startups. He suggested they need to, quote, reverse engineer exits.
Meaning?
Meaning build the company strategically from day one with a potential acquisition pathway already in mind. Think about who might buy you and why and build towards that.
That proactive thinking seems key. And it's not just tech or pharma feeling this strategic push at it.
No, not at all.
Jeff Black, Ronan O'Kelly, Magnus Buerkle. They all pointed to a kind of surprising revitalization in European banking M&A.
Yeah, that stood out.
They see strategic deals as a key way for banks to use excess capital and gain scale. Apparently, there's a supportive regulatory vibe and this growing need for banks to build up fee income streams.
Right, shifting away from just lending.
Exactly. And David Keene noted a similar strategic evolution over in the pharma CDMO space. You know, the contract development and manufacturing organizations. They're also using M&A and tech leadership to position themselves for the future.
Okay, so moving from the why of M&A, let's shift gears a bit to process and playbooks. This theme really hammered home that, well, structured preparation is just vital for good outcome.
No winging it.
Definitely not. Shree Malati and Pat Linden, for instance, they emphasize that sellers who actually start prepping maybe 12, even 18 months ahead, they often get valuation premiums.
Why is that?
It's pretty simple, really. Cleaner diligence, it just builds more buyer confidence. And Pat Linden specifically warned against, you know, rushing just to hit a year-end close if you're not truly ready.
Patience pays off, it sounds like.
It really does. And Herwig Springer, tying back to that trust theme, he also advised starting those trust-building talks before you even grant data room access.
To head off problems later.
Exactly. Reduce those renegotiation risks down the line. And Eric Sauk had some great points on protecting yourself proactively from post-close headaches.
Like what?
Things like a seller breaching a non-compete or hidden debt suddenly appearing. He suggests structuring things like a seller note.
Right. Mary Joyce defined that for us, it's basically the seller lending part of the purchase price back to the buyer.
Precisely. It aligns incentives, manages risk, a neat tool.
But this complexity raises the question of getting help, doesn't it?
It does. Brian Dukes highlighted a pretty stark statistic. Over half of business acquisitions apparently fall apart because founders try to go it alone.
Wow. 50%.
Yeah, leading to costly mistakes, leaving serious cash on the table. It just underlines the need for expert advice.
Definitely.
And thinking about streamlining preparation, Alexis Chevalier talked about using Ishikawa diagrams, those fishbone diagrams, to diagnose potential integration blockers before day one. It's a cool visual way to break down complex M&A problems into clearer buckets like people, processes, systems.
That sounds really practical for spotting issues early. And speaking of expertise, John Shipp's background in cybersecurity and software, that gives him an extra edge, as he put it, in due diligence. Increasingly vital today.
Absolutely critical now.
And Francisco T. apparently offers a practical M&A toolkit, real-world guides for strategy integration. Sounds useful for anyone navigating this.
Yeah, practical tools are always welcome.
Okay, let's move to maybe the make-or-break part of M&A. Integration and people. This is really where the rubber meets the road, isn't it? Where deals succeed or fail.
It absolutely is. Beyond the numbers, it's the people. Christine Wazurek and Priscilla Hackman-Carney, they strongly emphasize HR due diligence and culture integration. They see these as the strongest predictors of actually capturing value post-close.
Culture fit is key then.
Hugely. Priscilla specifically flagged cultural misalignment as a super common reason for integration stalling out. But crucially, she also said it's often fixable if you tackle it right.
That's hopeful.
Yeah. And Florian Mueller also noted that cultural fit is often underestimated. Karsten Friedrichs put it bluntly, M&A integration failures, often down to people, communication, lack of leadership. Not just the financials, it's a people problem.
It really hammers home that human element. Dylan Roberts actually offers a tool for this, his M&A People Integration Scorecard.
Oh yeah, what's that do?
It's described as a quick way for leaders to spot quantifiable risks. Things like leadership misalignment, potential culture clashes, hidden retention risks. Seeing those risks spelled out and quantified must help a lot with planning.
Definitely sounds useful. And this isn't just, you know, gut feel. It's backed by research. Dr. Hendrik Engelhardt's study on post-merger integration confirmed that most value erosion actually happens after the deal is signed.
After signing. Wow.
Yeah, it underscores just how urgent, robust, early integration planning really is. Mm. Daniel Resnick also pointed out that clients often regret not prioritizing the growth strategy before getting bogged down in post-deal integration.
So they wait too long to think about growth.
Yeah, they wait until after the deal's closed. It's a huge missed opportunity to build momentum right from the start.
Right. You need to think beyond just closing the deal. Think about day two and beyond. Anne Van Zandt's insights really hit this home, the need for immediate leadership continuity, succession planning across founders, managers, just to keep things moving.
Keep that momentum going.
Exactly. And Larry Hartman had some really grounded advice for founders, basically. Don't get obsessed chasing that last half turn on your multiple.
Huh. Easier said than done sometimes.
True. But his point is that cultural fit often matters more than squeezing out that last bit of valuation because you're stepping into a partnership, right? A good fit creates more long-term value.
That's a great point. That long-term people-first view is critical. Chris Stappard also noted the rise of integration specialists in the UK market.
More demand for that expertise.
Seems so. Highlighting their crucial role in actually executing well after the deal. And Sebastian Lake Skafte Anderson predicted that for 2025, M&A success will hinge more on flawless operational execution than just nailing the strategy on paper.
Back to those practicalities again. Mike Polchinski and Jason Rose both stressed making sure IT is ready for M&A. Avoid those costly delays, operational hiccups during integration.
Oh, IT integration is a minefield if not planned well.
For sure. Jason Rose specifically mentioned application portfolio management in healthcare M&A as a way to streamline the tech side. And Clincy Kendrick talked with Lynette Butte about the problems when HR gets involved too late in deals.
Yeah, that's a classic issue.
And how vital it is to build that people-first approach right from the get-go. It really shows the focus shifting. Dharmendra Singh even launched a newsletter, The Integration Insider, just focused on real-world lessons from complex integrations.
Okay, let's shift to valuation and financing. This is all about, you know, how the market bridges those value gaps and figures out what something's worth.
Always a tricky area.
Definitely. Eric Kuppelman and Anthony V. Bova both highlighted earnouts and seller notes as tools being used more often now.
To bridge valuation gaps.
Yeah, and align incentives too. An earnout, just quickly, is where part of the price depends on the acquired company hitting certain performance targets after the deal.
Right.
But Eric Kuppelman did add a note of caution, especially about earnouts under French law. He mentioned complexities, enforceability challenges, highlights the need for really careful drafting.
That's a critical detail, especially for cross-border stuff. Khalid Azar offered a really nice perspective on valuation, too. He said it's not just one number.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like a dynamic range, a spectrum, he called it. Influenced by the financials, sure, but also market positioning, sentiment, even who you're negotiating with.
Right. The buyer matters.
Exactly. He talked about the financial floor. Maybe what any buyer would pay based on numbers versus the strategic ceiling. That's what the right buyer might pay because the deal solves a bigger strategic problem for them.
That's a great way to frame it. Stuart Hands added to that complexity, noting how valuations get shaped by this whole web of things. Economic volatility, inflation, regulatory hurdles, even cultural nuances.
So navigating that requires real clarity.
Clarity and confidence, yeah.
Which makes it even more vital to know what actually drives a premium price.
Huh.
Lindsay M. Wendler outlined some key drivers.
Okay, like what?
Things like high recurring revenue, low customer concentration, not having all your eggs in one basket, a strong second layer of management.
So it's not just the founder.
Right. Scalable systems, clean financials, basically anything that builds buyer confidence makes them feel secure about the future. That's what gets you the premium.
Makes total sense. And on the more technical side, Aaron Pinnegar offered a useful M&A tax tip.
Oh, yeah.
About using tax covenants in the purchase agreements. Just making sure you carefully address all the important tax points. Seems small, but can really impact the final cash outcome.
Good reminder. Okay, theme number 5, technology and AI. This feels like it's genuinely transforming the M&A landscape, changing how deals actually get done.
Oh, absolutely. It's moving fast. What's really significant here, as Kisan Patel discussed with Sabi Khan, is how AI tools are streamlining just so many tasks now.
Like what kind of tasks?
We're talking drafting initial investment theses, building presentation slides even from unstructured notes, doing strategic fit analysis, automatically extracting key terms from contracts, summarizing huge data rooms.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is, and it materially compresses deal timelines. It frees up the deal teams to focus more on the human side, the strategic thinking, the stuff AI can't do.
That efficiency is huge. And we're seeing it play out in actual deals. Kjell Jensen analyzed OpenAI buying IO, right?
Yeah.
As a prime example of a capability buy. They weren't just buying revenue. They were buying specific AI talent and tech to strengthen their own stack, building for the future.
Exactly. But all this tech brings new risks, or at least a sharper focus on them. Sean Whiteside really stressed that cyber risk assessment. It's moved way beyond just an IT checklist.
It's a board level issue now.
Absolutely. A potential gating factor for deals? He gave some powerful examples, like Verizon cutting the Yahoo purchase price by $350 million because of data breaches.
Ouch.
Yeah. Or Target losing $200 million because a third-party vendor had weak security. It really shows the massive financial downside if you overlook cyber risk.
Huge implications. Yet despite those risks, the appetite for tech-driven growth seems massive. Marcel Van Oost reported on 4 recent fintech deals, all over $1 billion.
Yeah, across different sectors too.
Right. Neobanking, crypto trading, payments, payroll. It really underlines that investors are still confident in tech-enabled scale and digital transformation plays.
And Melinda Gentry's view is interesting. She thinks Gen AI is fundamentally changing the role of M&A teams.
Awesome.
Moving them from just being executors, you know, task doers, to becoming more like strategic architects. using advanced screening and integration tools like EY's Competitive Edge, for example.
AI handles the grunt work, humans do more strategy.
That's the idea. Ron Hofmeister also advocated using agentic AI, that's AI that can kind of proactively take actions to achieve a goal to boost M&A success, especially in integration and fostering innovation, using AI for higher level stuff.
That really does sound like a game changer for deal teams. Greg Gribble shared insights from the M&A Summit 2025 about promising legal tech tools.
Using Gen AI in legal.
Yeah, for vendor due diligence, buyer due diligence, even drafting SBAs, the sales and purchase agreements. He predicted big changes for law firms, their structures, maybe even how they charge.
Interesting times for legal tech.
Definitely. Riley Dearden also talked about how Gen AI is reshaping U.S.-Canada, cross-border M&A specifically. New legal challenges, but also new strategic advantages. And Kai Hesselman's podcast dug into how AI is broadly changing markets and M&A deals in general.
Okay, last theme. Legal and regulatory. Always a critical piece, and it continues to really shape deal-making, doesn't it?
For sure. And building on what we heard earlier, Eric Kopelman's warning about those French earnout structures really fits here.
Right, the enforceability challenges.
Exactly. It just highlights the absolute need for super careful drafting, especially in cross-border deals where legal nuances can trip you up badly.
And speaking of cross-border, Ronan O'Kelly and Magnus Buerkel confirmed that accelerated European banking consolidation is still very much a thing.
Driven by regulations.
Yeah, favorable regulatory signals, apparently, plus stronger acquisition currency for the banks. They said 2025 is off to a record start in that sector.
Interesting. It's not just banks, though, right?
Yeah.
Philip Chow had insights on ESOP's employee stock ownership plans.
Oh, yeah. Those are getting more popular as exit routes.
Apparently.
Hmm?
Nearly doubled in transaction volume. But, he cautioned, they do require careful regulatory navigation because of their unique structure. And Marianne Hermel offered perspectives from Sweden, emphasizing that need for balance and regulation, encouraging foreign investment while still protecting national security.
Always a tricky balance. And thinking about where deals go wrong legally, Philip Koshin's article mentioned regulatory hurdles like competition reviews, national security screenings.
Things that add complexity.
Significant complexity. These are things that can genuinely kill a deal, no matter how good the strategy looks on paper. You have to factor them in early.
Yet, despite all that, there was maybe a hint of optimism. Mika Heininen's takeaways from an M&A conference in New York suggested things might be getting slightly more liberal on transactional clearances.
Compared to recent years, maybe?
Potentially. But Benjamin Shakura also highlighted how dealmakers are constantly having to recalibrate strategies for 2025 because of all the ongoing uncertainty.
Yeah.
So it's clearly still a very dynamic environment.
Definitely a moving target. So, you know, as we wrap this up, it really feels like the big takeaway from all these LinkedIn insights over the last couple of weeks is this. M&A is getting supercharged by data and AI, no doubt.
Right.
But true value creation, and maybe more importantly, value protection, seems to hinge more than ever on really understanding and proactively managing the human side of things.
The culture, the people.
Exactly. The cultural nuances, the unforeseen operational complexities that inevitably pop up. Technology speeds things up, quantifies risk, but it feels like the people, the human element, that's what ultimately determines if a deal truly succeeds or fails in the long run.
That's a really powerful thought, and it connects everything we've discussed, doesn't it? So maybe final question for you, the listener, to ponder. In an M&A landscape where AI is rapidly streamlining tasks and quantifying risk, what remains the most challenging yet ultimately crucial human factor that you believe will determine the true success or failure of a deal? If you enjoyed this deep dive, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also check out our other editions on private equity, venture capital, and strategy and consulting. Thank you for tuning in and sharing this deep dive with us.
And remember to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes.